So I don't know how aware you are of what's going on south of our border. There's an election happening this week, and that country seems to be split about 50-50, and the country seems to be angry. And we care. For those of you who are new to Canada, you might not realize how much we tend to care about the American system, but we're directly affected by the American system. They're a different country, but they're very close neighbors. And so what goes on there often bleeds up into Canada and those kind of things. And so we're impacted. So what that means is that many of us tend to watch the election. We tend to be very aware of that. And in that, as we also witness the division, the violence, the anger that seems to be encompassing that country, and that we see bleeding into our own country as well politically, some of us experience fear. Regardless of which side you are hoping wins, some of us are feeling fear, we're feeling anxiety, we're feeling nervous, we're feeling like the whole world might burn down by the end of the week, depending on what happens in this election. And so there's a lot of this kind of anxiety that ramps up in there. And again, we have people in this congregation who would vote on both sides of the party. So this isn't about being partisan. This is about saying, we carry this anxiety because of the unknown, right? Those of us who've lived in Canada all or most of our lives, we're used to living in a fairly safe country, a country where we might disagree with the politicians, we might lament the corruption in the politics and things like that, but it's a safe country, relatively speaking, right? We haven't experienced the kind of things that some of you have experienced in your countries, the kinds of things that go on around the world. And yet, we look at what's happening south of the border, seeing it bleed up here, and we can experience fear that same kind of political unrest might come here. And I know that, you know, as Christians, we're not supposed to be afraid, we're not supposed to worry, but let's be honest, we do, right? We do worry. And Psalm 24 has something powerful to say to that worry. I want you to hear again how this psalm begins in the first two verses. The earth is the Lord's, and all that is in it, the world and those who live in it. So not just the rivers and the oceans and the cows and the deer and the moose and whatever else, the fields, not just that, but all the people who live in it. Everything that is covered by the word creation, the world, all of it belongs to God. All of it. Why? Because God made it. It's his. He didn't give it away. He didn't make it and say, okay, now people, it's yours now. I'm washing my hands of it. No, he did say, here's this creation. Live in it, multiply, enjoy it, take care of it, meaning not just the creation, but also each other. But it still all belongs to God because he founded it, he made it, he created it, he established it. It all belongs to God. And here's the thing, whoever wins that election, whatever happens this week, 10 years from now, 50 years from now, in the political milieu of North America or anywhere else in the world, this truth doesn't change. The whole world and everything in it and everyone in it belongs to God. I want you to really hear this. I want you to hear this as you go home and you're praying this week. I want you to hear this every time your fear or your anxiety raises up inside of you. As you're maybe, some of you are going to be very involved watching the polls come in and all of that. And some of you are going to say, I want nothing to do with it. Either way, this truth does not change. This is a truth that has been since the beginning of time and will continue to be until the end of time, that the earth and all that is in it, everything and everyone belongs to God. We can hold on to that. We can rest onto that. One of the words we use, we talk about the sovereignty of God, that God is king, God is in charge, God is overall, that it all belongs to him. And that's what this psalm reminds us of. Whoever we elect or don't elect, whoever takes power by control or by devious means or good means or whatever the situation is politically in any country in the world, this truth doesn't change. It all belongs to God. Ultimately, God is the one who is sovereign. I was listening to a podcast this week, and the main guy in the podcast drives me crazy. I don't much care for him. But there's this woman on this podcast who is brilliant. She's a young woman. She's a theologian. She's so articulate. Every time she talks, I think, oh, I wish I could form words like she forms them and put thoughts into expression the way she does. Her name is Caitlin Schiss, and she's a theologian. And in a recent podcast, she said this: it's telling that one of the most frequent instructions about politics in the New Testament is pray for the leaders. That's not just pray to God for them because God can do things. I think it's also instruction for us in you have different posture toward politics when you are praying. You're recognizing that there's a sovereign authority over all of these other authorities that has control over those things. And I so appreciate it. It was so timely for me to hear her this week saying these words to remember that we pray. We're instructed, Paul instructs us over and over again, pray for the leaders, pray for those in authority, pray for those who you've elected. And it's not just pray for them so that you can go, well, sometimes we do pray this, right? We go, God, would you just give them a swift kick and get them behaving properly? Or would you deal with the corruption? Or would you just give them a brain? Or whatever it is that you might pray, right? Maybe you pray nicer things than I pray, but sometimes those are the things that I need to pray. But praying for the authorities, praying for the politicians, praying for those people who are in leadership who have power, it's not just about that. It's the same as how we pray for each other. It's really no different. Sometimes we do pray for each other and we go, God, I pray that you would give that person a shake. God, I pray that you would just talk some sense into that person, right? Sometimes that's how we pray. But the point is that when we are praying for other people, be they the politicians and the leaders with tons of power, or just our neighbor, or just our friend, or whoever, what we're doing is we're remembering that God is sovereign. We're remembering that we take all of this to God because God is the one to whom all of the earth, everything and everyone in it belongs. And we can rest on that truth. And God isn't the kind of owner who abuses those that he owns or holds on to owns. That's a bad choice of words. We're not slaves. We don't just belong to God. But we are loved by God. Think of it more as a child belongs to their parent, right? Thinking of good parents, I know some of us have not had good parents, but think of a great parent and how a child belongs to that great parent. Belongs in their embrace, in their protection, in their little shove when they need to be shoved a little bit out of the comfort of their own home. Whatever it is, that's what it is to belong to God. And that's what Psalm 24 reminds us, not just that God is sovereign, but that we belong to God, not just as some removed king over there who's just watching, but as a father who loves us beyond our ability to even comprehend. That's what it means, that the earth, everything in it, including us, belong to God. The psalm continues. There's three sections to this psalm, and it starts with these couple of verses, which reminds us this is who God is. Everything else sits under this umbrella of God. To God belongs all of it. It's all God's. Whoever the earthly authorities or powers or leaders might be, it all belongs to God. And then we move to the fact that God invites human beings, the people that God has created, he invites us into his presence. Now, I have to tell you that this was revolutionary in that part of the world when the Psalms were happening, when King David was alive and all of that. This was revolutionary. The idea that you would be invited into the presence of God, not just as a slave to do whatever the God demanded of you, but as a child, as a beloved child, this was revolutionary. This was unheard of. And so the psalmist asks, who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? Just means, like, who is going to step into the presence of God? Who's going to stand in his holy presence? Who gets to be there? Who's in the place, the presence of God? And in verse 4, those who have clean hands and pure hearts, who don't lift up their souls. Soul is just a word that means their self, their whole being, everything that you are, to what is false, to that which is not God. And don't swear deceitfully. Don't swear. This is talking about swearing allegiance to anything that is not God, or swearing allegiance to God and then not acting like it. But the whole thing is about who gets to go into the presence of God, who gets to be there in the presence of God. Anybody who's focused on God, who has this relationship with God, who has allowed God to give them clean hands and a pure heart. Because you might be sitting there and going, clean hands and a pure heart. Well, I guess I'm out. I don't get to descend the hill or ascend the hill of the Lord. I don't get to be in God's presence because I know full well just the person I yelled at this morning. Or I know full well that I have a few idols in my life, things that take ownership of me, things that I find myself worshiping instead of God. I know full well that sometimes I'm selfish, that sometimes I'm greedy, that sometimes I'm covered in pride, whatever it might be. I know full well that I don't take care of myself, or whatever it might be. So I guess that leaves me out, right? Who can descend the hill of the Lord? Not me, I guess. Except here's the thing. We're going to be coming to the communion table. But what God does is God says, no, don't worry about that. I will give you clean hands and a pure heart. All you have to do is come to me like your Father who's waiting there with my arms wide open, ready to take you in, ready to embrace you fully. And I will give you clean hands and a pure heart. And that's the promise in verse 5. They will receive blessing from the Lord and vindication from the God of their salvation. Vindication, what a big word. And it's one of the ways that you can translate the word from Hebrew. But I think a better word, and some of the translators agree, think the better word is righteousness, which means right relationship with God. So God is saying, those who come to me with their clean hands and a pure heart, even if I'm the one who has to give them the clean hands and the pure heart, they will be blessed by me. How? By being put in right relationship with me. By perfecting, repairing that relationship between God, who is the perfect Father, and his beloved children, his beloved child. That's the most extraordinary gift, the most extraordinary blessing from this God, this sovereign God to whom everything and everyone belongs. If we go to him, he will give us the clean hands and the pure heart. And we will be in this extraordinary right relationship with God. It is a blessing. And then in verse 6, such is the company of those who seek him, who seek the face of the God of Jacob. All of those who go looking for God find him. Why? Because he's not lost. We're the ones who were lost. So if we go looking, he's right there waiting to be found. Waiting to embrace you. Even waiting to embrace you before your hands are clean, before your heart is pure. Because he's the one who wants to make them that way. We can't make them that way on our own. All of those who seek God find him. All of those who seek God to be in right relationship with God will have their hands clean and their hearts made pure. All of us. Because we all belong to God to begin with. Doesn't matter who you are, what you've done, where you've come from. And then it moves into this in verse 7, moves into this great expression of praise. And here's one thing I want to point out. So he's very poetic metaphor. Lift up your heads, O gates, be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of Glory may come in. And there's all sorts of imagery there about the temple and coming in. But here's the thing. It's not lift up your heads, O gates, lift up your doors, that we may go in to where God is. That's not what's happening here. What's happening here is that the King of Glory may come in. Because it's not just we go seeking God, we go to God, but God also comes to us. Another thing unheard of in the other religions of the day and the place where this was all happening. The fact that God doesn't just sit off there going, hey, if you can figure out how to... Do you remember those old Philadelphia cream cheese commercials where you had the angels on the clouds? Maybe you don't. That's good. You shouldn't have that scalded into your memory. But God isn't sitting on a cloud up there somewhere just going, you know what? When you decide, I'm waiting. Here I am. Come when you can figure out how to fly. Instead, God is saying, you can't get to me on your own. You've tried, and it just doesn't work. It's just like you can't make your own hands clean and your own hearts pure. You can't do that on your own. And God says, and you can't get to me on your own. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to come to you. Lift up your heads. Open your eyes. Watch. See. The King of Glory is coming. The one under whom all of earth, all the world, everything on it, everything in it, all the people, everyone belongs. That one is coming to us. Who is the King of Glory? The Lord strong and mighty. The Lord mighty in battle. And then he says it again, lift up your heads, O gates, be lifted up, O ancient doors. Pay attention, look and see that the King of Glory may come in. Who is the King of Glory? The Lord of hosts. He is the King of Glory. This God, the same God that we talked about in verses 1 and 2, this same God who is sovereign over all of creation, everything and everyone in it, that same God is the one who has decided to come in. To come to us with this gift of making us and repairing our relationship with him, with this gift of clean hands and a pure heart, with this incredible gift of being able to be in relationship with God. Let me tell you that when that is secure, when we are secure in knowing that we are encompassed by God, whatever happens here on earth fades a little bit from that. It doesn't mean the wrong person, whoever you think is the wrong person, won't get elected. It doesn't mean that all your worst nightmares based on the election or anything else won't necessarily come true. But it does mean that you will live it all encompassed in the arms, in the shelter, in the refuge of a God to whom everything and everyone belongs. You will be carried in that. You will be safe in that. And I don't mean just like physically safe. I just mean everything about your soul, about the wholeness, the entirety of who you are, will continue to be secure in belonging to God, who is sovereign over all of it because he made it. I don't know what's going to happen this week. I don't know if you're going to be happy or I'm going to be happy or both of us are going to be happy. But what I do know is that the earth is the Lord's and all that is in it. What I know is that the world and everyone who lives in it belongs to God, whether they acknowledge it or not, belongs to God. Because he founded it on the seas, he established it on the rivers. And all of those who seek him find him, because he's not lost. All of those who want those clean hands, those pure hearts that we talk in the New Testament, it talks about being reborn or newly born. All of that is offered by the God who doesn't wait for us to go get him, but comes to us proactively. That's what this table is about. Some of you are more familiar with this than others, but every month we have a table set up before us like this, and there's juice here, there's bread here, and these symbolize a story from the New Testament about Jesus. And it was on the last night of Jesus' life, the last night that he was alive. And everything, Jesus was extraordinary. And there were people who didn't like that Jesus was extraordinary. There were people in power politically who abused that and were corrupt and hated all the things that Jesus stood for because it challenged them. It challenged the status quo that they were doing quite fine under. And so on the last night of Jesus' life, he was having a meal with his disciples. And at the end of the meal, he took a cup. This cup would have been filled with wine. We use grape juice. And he said to his disciples, this wine in here, this cup, this is a new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink of it in remembrance of me. This was a gift of Jesus, knowing that he was going to die, knowing what was coming, knowing about the crucifixion and all people were going to be lost. People who'd been hoping for Jesus were going to go, well, what do we do now? Everything is lost, which is how some among us will feel this week. Everything is lost. There's no hope. I had hope, and now it's all gone. What do we do now? But Jesus knew that their hope wasn't misplaced, because he knew God was about something bigger than just the crucifixion. And we know that God conquered death through Jesus. We know that Jesus took all of the sin, all of the pain, all of the brokenness, all of everything with him into death and was raised, was reborn, came anew, having defeated all of that. And when we drink the juice, we were remembering that. We were remembering blood signifies life. We were remembering that Jesus poured out his life so that we would have life. He took bread at the same time. We use these little gluten-free crackers, but he took it and he broke it and he gave it to his disciples. And he said to them, this bread, it's my body, which is for you. See, Jesus wasn't just going to the cross. He wasn't just going to die because he was a victim of circumstance. He was going for us. For the everything and everyone in the world that God created and that belongs to God. He knew his body would die, and yet it didn't stay dead because Jesus conquered death. And that when we come to Jesus and we partake of his body, we partake of his life that he offers, the clean hands, the pure heart follow. It's not like these are some magical things like, hey, I'm going to eat and it's all going to be good. But they represent us coming to Jesus in faith. They represent us seeking God and God saying, here I am. Let me give you the clean hands and the pure heart.